Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Dark Rhino Security's Security Confidential. Today, we have a fantastic guest joining us, and we're honored to have him, Mr. Joel Beasley. Joel has a passion for creating engaging content that informs, inspires, and entertains. And he's done that quite well. He is the founder of the Modern CTO podcast. He is the author of the Modern CTO book, and he is one of the founders of Pro Series Media. So welcome to the show, Joel. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate you being here. And there is so much to talk about, especially with you've had a fantastic series of guests on your show, and we'll get into that in just a minute here, but would love to start off with hearing what your origin story is, Joel. How did you get into this?
Yeah, so my dad was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
He learned both software and hardware design by putting GPS systems into the B-32 stealth bomber.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then he left the Air Force and went into private, and he started doing freelancing gigs, and I had several siblings. So he would take me around because my mom didn't want to, you know, handle all the kids in the house. He'd take one of them. I would go. He would give me small tasks. I got interested in computers and programming. And then at age 12, I got hit by a car.
Oh my.
And yeah. And I was in a wheelchair for a year. And the positive to that negative situation was I got to come out of school. And then I had a bunch of free time, and I just invested that in more programming, writing code, understanding. I was doing a lot of like the Scriptlance, Upwork. Okay. We call it Upwork today.
Yep.
Because they didn't care. I was, you know, 12, 13 at home. They just needed a project done, and I had reviews on my profile, and I just made money. So then you fast forward, built software all through high school. Right out of high school, ended up selling some real estate software I had built, made a bunch of money, lost a bunch of money. That's what happens when you're
Hey, I've done that. Believe me, this is my fifth startup. I can tell you all roads on the path of entrepreneurship do not lead to profit.
No, but they lead to experience. So
yes, they do.
Yeah. So from selling that and then getting involved, meeting some of the people through that process, the lawyers, the venture capital people through the whole process of the exit, I started, you know, talking with other people that were founding companies or building technical teams, had these conversations over and over and over. And so I said, hey, why don't I write some blog post, maybe a book of just the several conversations I kept having so I could just point people at the book.
Yep.
And from there, before I released the book, I said, hey, I'm going to start calling some CTOs and technology leaders that I know. I'm going to run the content of the book through by them and say, hey, is this good, bad? Should I, you know, how do you receive this? And those conversations were really fun, and I wanted to keep them going. So I said, hey, why not start a podcast and use that as the excuse to keep these conversations going? And now it's been 6 years and 650 something episodes. It was an expensive hobby. So I had a partnership in a financial software company before I started the podcast. I sold my interest in that, got 250 grand, put that into the podcast. And so the first 2 years I just burned through that and didn't make any money. Then we figured out that we could sell sponsorships and build content for brands. Grew that to about $1 million a year, did that for 3 years. Then some of those people that had repeat sponsored us said, hey, you know, we're thinking about making a podcast. Could you make us a podcast? And we said, well, if we make it just like we make ours, because we had so much success with that method, I said, sure. And so now we make about 20 shows other than our show for
That's
different
fantastic.
Brands.
So yeah. You've gone into the podcast production business.
Yeah, unintentionally. Mm-hmm. I never woke up one day and said, hey, I'm going to make a production company and I'm going to enter the media space. I did software for 17 years. Like I just wrote mostly enterprise logic, like think about real estate transaction processing or financial planning processing, you know, scalable solutions like that. So I never intended to be here, but here I am.
Well, you know, and that's like a lot of entrepreneurs, people don't realize it. Some people set out on a goal on day one and they actually go down that path. But a lot of times you end up in a situation that you had unanticipated and it works out for the better. It does. And that's something I'd like our listeners to understand if they're considering entrepreneurship. You know, have a plan, but that plan might change and you might become something other than what you thought you might be.
Almost always, the person that you have to become to achieve the results that you want is an entirely different person than you are when you start.
Couldn't have said it any better. I'm going to steal that quote from you.
Well, here, I've got a better quote from another guy that's more reliable as far as like popularity and quotes and self-development. I'm not known in that space, but what changed my life was I heard this guy named Jim Rohn. He's old guy. He's gone. But his old YouTube videos or his old videos were put on YouTube. I think he was popular in the 70s or something like that.
Okay.
And he said, the most frustrating thing in the world is expecting above average results without being an above average person. And when I heard that, it hit home so hard to me. At the time in my life when I heard that, I said, that's why I'm so frustrated. I'm wanting, you know, this to be big, or I'm wanting this big position, or I'm wanting these things that are huge, but am I being exceptional if I want these exceptional things? And then that's when a switch flipped for me.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, your story, just listening to you talk here is similar to some other greats. While you were talking about your unfortunate accident there, I want to say, if my memory is fading, I'm not as young as you are, Joel, but Eddie Van Halen came to mind. You know, he ended up for a while, I think, in the hospital and just went to town on the guitar. And
it gives you free time.
You know what happened. So talk a little bit about that mindset. How did you keep such a positive attitude from that what would have been a very negative experience?
Well, getting hit by the car.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know. I think I was, you know, I was a boy. I was 10 or 11 when it happened. 10 or 11 year old boys are not the nicest, most well-behaved creatures on the planet. But I think there was a lot of humbling in the aspect of having someone take care of me, help me shower and go to the bathroom and all of that. I think I learned a lot. I also got the opportunity to spend more time around adults, something that often homeschool kids get. I wasn't homeschooled, but I was actually homeschooled technically, but for about a year or two while I was going through the accident. But that was the equivalent of them just sending workbooks home to me. There was no teacher or anything like that. So because I was working with the doctors and rehab and all of these things, I got to spend more time around adults, which allowed me to become more comfortable speaking to adults. And that I think that's just a huge advantage. It's why we homeschool our kids.
Now, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. You know the education they're getting, and you know the sources, and you know the values you're instilling. I mean, all those things are very difficult to argue with. Being a parent myself, I understand that, completely get that. And you picked on CTOs because probably, as you described, you were a technologist yourself. What have you seen, having interviewed so many guests, what contributions do you think the CTO, a well-positioned office of the CTO, makes to an organization? What do they do?
Okay, so after 650 conversations, I think I kind of have a good answer for this.
Please, we'd love to hear this.
There are typically, if you want to just generalize across the whole bunch, you would say that CTOs are typically focused in the product area, outward facing. CIOs are typically focused inward facing operationally. So those are just high level generalizations. From a CTO or a CIO, I encourage people to understand what an executive team is like. Like, try to figure out, spend time around executive teams. If it's not at your own company, find other companies. Because what happens is the executive team is a group of people that are trying to achieve this result. And they each have a core competency. And when that person, they look at their core competency and they say, how do we explain this to the outside world? It's really clear what I'm doing. it's really clear how I'm part of this plan that we're operating together. But what would be the label to the outside world? And then we pick that label, CTO, CIO, CISO, whatever it may be. And then that's how the labels get chosen. A lot of people that are working jobs don't necessarily see that until they spend more time around the executive team. But it's really about what the person's doing. And that's going to vary based off of how that company brings value to the marketplace. And so that's why I'm against things like two pizza teams or, you know, looking out at other companies about how they're structuring these things and trying to apply it to yours. Maybe if they're a direct competitor and there's some merit there, but you build the team structure and the organizational structure within the CIO, you know, realm within the technology department based on what you need to deliver. So if I'm an agency, my team structure is going to be very different than if I'm building a product and so on.
Yeah, it's not a one size fits all approach. I mean, it's even if you have a competitor in the same arena and you're trying to differentiate yourself, you might set up a very different team structure to your competitive advantage or what you think it might
be. Like at our that's a good point. Like our production company, because we walked into it backwards, we found that all of our competitors were set up where they have these like teams of freelancers that are all, you know, like they consider them reliable freelancers. They're in their pool and then they put like tickets out and they complete the tickets. So you never really know exactly who's working on the show. And because we had our setup the way we did, everyone was just full-time employees and they just had one show. And so we didn't realize going into it that that was a competitive advantage, but it ended up being so. So
That's a huge advantage. When you use the word reliable and freelancers together, I was like, where?
I was trying to be nice to them.
I was like, all right, I'd like to find a reliable freelancer. Those go for a premium if they exist. You just must be a very lucky man. You've happened to come across, or there's people who've come across them. But talk to me a little bit about the role of failure in success. Have you seen that come up in the many conversations? Have people been open about talking about failures and success?
Yeah. So obviously everyone gives you the highlight reel, and then you can dig under that, because people want the highlight reel. It's what they want off the cuff. It's the first thing you're going to stand on stage. You do the highlight reel, and then you can get, you know, a little bit deeper. But when it comes to failure, the thing that made me comfortable with failure is somewhere along the lines, I heard somebody describe, okay, so here's what I did. So I bought three books.
Okay.
I bought the life story, so autobiography of Richard Branson,
okay,
Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk.
All right.
And I said, I'm going to read their stories because I want to know how these guys became billionaires.
All right.
From kid growing up. And so I read all three books. And after that, and just a little asterisk there, I audibled all three books.
Okay.
Because I consider audible reading. Okay.
Sure.
So and I want to remove that stigma that if you didn't read it, it didn't count yet. I audibled the three books. And what I took away from that was greater information than you can get in 100 years working at Stanford, right?
Oh, or any really?
Sort of Ivy League business school. Well, at least the way I process information, yeah.
Please.
Because here's the thing. As humans, we have this ability to think like others. I can say, I want you to think like Steve Jobs, or I want you to think like, let's pick a character that's alive, like Elon Musk. You could mimic him. Or if I said a political figure, you could mimic that political figure. The famous, there's, you know, Bill Clinton and his speeches and stuff, or Trump, these political figures, you can think as if you were them, right? Given the information you have about them. Well, so it's an ability that we have as humans. So if you translate that to, okay, I want to be able to think like how a billionaire thinks, you have to read the story and understand and watch how they make decisions throughout the course of their life. Obviously, you backfill a lot of information and whatnot. But I read these three books, and after, I just had this realization. I said, okay, the commonality between all these people is that what everyone else is calling success is simply the sum of their failures. And so I was like, all right, so success is equivalent to a collection of failures. And if the only way to achieve success is by having a collection of failures, so my job is not to go have success. My job is to go have a lot of failures. And so I subsequently did that, and I'm continuing to do that. well, today.
Yeah, and people think, I mean, Thomas Edison was a great example of that, right? I mean, I think he, well, I forget his quote, but it was something to the effect of, I found 1,000 ways that a light bulb doesn't work. I'm paraphrasing, yeah. Right? I mean, mm-hmm. That tells you how many failures he had. So failure is not necessarily a bad thing. And that's another thing I'd like our audience that's looking at their future careers and trying to find a pathway to greater success, whether it's in cybersecurity or they want to move out of that field. There's going to be hiccups, and those hiccups are essentially important, is what you're saying then, Joel. They're foundational to building a success model, if you will, that creates a much larger success. What if it happens really easy?
The success?
Yeah. Without a lot of failure. Is there any downside?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't know how to manage it.
Now, that's interesting. Do you have any examples of that by chance?
Yeah, me. I got a bunch of money when I was like 18, 19 years old, and I blew it all because I had no idea how to deal with it. I didn't know how to ask for help when I was going down either, because I'd go to the Christmas dinner with my family and they would talk about how successful I am in the tech and this and that and the other. And I didn't want to let that persona die. I didn't want to ruin that image that they were able to project on my behalf and so on. And that prevented me from, you know, wanting to seek help or anything. So I crashed and burned, of course, and then I rebuilt. But that was just one of the important lessons. And, you know, you screw up enough. And I say this with a big asterisk. If you're an intelligent person and you care and you have drive and you're making mistakes and you're headed in a direction, then you will have success.
How do you stay motivated through the failures? Is there a secret sauce there?
To stay motivated through the failures? Well, yeah. So you're going to die anyways.
That's a factual statement. Everyone is going to die.
You're going to die. So, and if you think, oh, that's going to take forever, that's going to take 5 years, you're like, well, the next 5 years are going to pass anyways. The difference is like whether you're start now and then in 5 years you get the reward, or if you just continue for the next 5 years saying it's too long to do 5 years and then you end up in the same place you are. That's scary to me. That strikes fear into me, not achieving what I know I'm capable of. That scares me.
Yeah, getting to your full potential. And you know, that's a I want to say, I think I could be wrong, but I want to say the Buddhists say you should think about death maybe once a day to keep a perspective. It's similar to what you're saying, but it's a very Zen-like thing to know that there's a finality and there's a finite amount of time, and your choice is that time is going to come whether you want it to or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
it's
that
so
was
refreshing
a
to hear you say these things, Joel.
Yeah. So that was a pivotal moment for me. The way I learned the finality of life was my mom had a stomach ache. My brother's a doctor, and my mom had a stomach ache. So he said, "Well, that sounds a little odd. Go to the hospital." She did. She was there for a couple of weeks. They said, "Well, you have cancer." And the good news is it's like highly treatable. You know, even if it was bad, it would probably be like 2 years, but it's highly treatable. Well, 6 weeks later, we held her hand as she passed away.
Oh.
And going through that moment was, it was really eye-opening for me. It showed me a couple of my strengths that I had from dealing with really traumatic events by getting hit by the car and some other things. And up until that moment, so I had a little bit better experience with that. So I was happy that I was able to help my brother and sister process it in the moment when I was able to just process it later. So that was good. It felt good being like the rock for them, especially since I'm like the littler brother. So, you know, going through that moment and actually watching, you know, your mom pass away in front of you. And then on top of that, there's actually this weird freedom to it. And because there's literally only one person on the planet that I truly cared like what they think of me, and that's your mom. I think that's true for a lot of people. Like, you know, you care about your dad thinks about you, but there's something special about your mom. She birthed you into this life. And so from that regard, I said, well, I can't do anything wrong now. I can go take the biggest risk. I can screw up. I can do whatever I need to do. And that's when I got on my journey of consuming content along the lines of Jim Rohn or Tony Robbins, or I had previously scoffed at that space. I said, that's stupid. The personal development, self, I was like, that's dumb. I was software and I was like, that's just not me. I think those people are crazy, snake oil salesmen, all that stuff. But then my scientist part of me kicked in and said, well, you're at the end of your rope. You've tried everything. And then I asked myself, did I really try everything? Yeah. And I was like, no, there's this big area I've been discounting and just saying it's stupid, but I never actually tried it. So I started going through those areas and I found that, wow, I try to tell people anytime I have an audience or anything like that, if you scoff at self-development, go over to that category, because that is an area that you need to understand whether you disagree with it or not.
I think, you know, you talked about self-awareness. Without self-development, how do you get to self-awareness? That's critical, yeah, in that journey.
100%.
Right. And it's paramount to shaping a personality and staying motivated through the downturns. And man, I'm really sorry to hear about your mom and what happened to you at a very young age with the car. But in a lot of ways, what you're so positive that you looked at those challenges, which are horrific and traumatizing, and have really turned them into a strength, it sounds like, Joel, that keeps you driven and keeps you moving forward.
Well, I mean, it's a crossroads. Impressive. I don't think so. I think it's binary. I think when you experience the moment, you get to that point and you're at a crossroads. I can either sell, you know, oh, woe is me, or I can figure out how to leverage this to propel me forward. And I think those are the two options. I really only believe that there's two options. And then,
so you don't like the victim role in life?
No, sir, I do not. No, absolutely.
There's a lot of victim players out there. That's the easiest role, man.
They're on the rise, actually. I was talking, my wife and I talk about this a lot.
I swear to God, I did not listen in on that conversation.
We had this conversation at lunch today, probably 30 minutes before the podcast. I said, hey, is it just me? Because look, yesterday there was a shooting with an hour away from us.
Yeah, Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an hour from us. And, you know, we're Christian. And actually, last week, her parents, they don't like that we homeschool the kids. They're like, you got to put them in a Christian school. You know, you need to put them in. We're just like, no, because we live on the farm in the middle, like an hour outside of Nashville, kind of in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, nah, like, they have their opinions, but we have made our decisions. And we're like, we're homeschooling them. And then they messaged her yesterday, like, you should homeschool them. I was like, yep, because it hit at a Christian school 45 minutes from our house. And the way I saw the media handle that was interesting. Obviously, you get into the political side of things, but I don't know if we want to go down that path, but it was interesting they were saying that the victim, like half the world, I'm just going to say half the world and half the world, okay? Half the world was saying that the victim was the shooter themselves because how the world has bullied them, which is so far from my reality. And the other half of the world was saying the victims are the kids and the people that were hurt. But the fact that there's such a large portion of our population, I asked my wife at lunch today, I said, you know, we've been together for 10 years, right? And I said, you know, it wasn't like this when we first got together. Like, there might have been hints of it here and there, but it is definitely more of a victim-friendly society than it was 10 years ago. And so that's a trend line, a direction I think is headed in. And so we ask ourselves, what can we do? And because you want to do something, right? You want to like go take action. I'm biased towards action. And so the answer we come back to is by raising our kids with the values that we believe will lead to a successful human civilization. And it's anticlimactic, but yeah.
Well, it's, you're instilling responsibility along with a whole bunch of other values. And there's a fundamental truth, whether people want to hear it or not, that everything that has happened to any human being that's ever existed, there's a great deal of responsibility that they bear for it at an individual level. And unless you're willing to acknowledge that sense of responsibility, everything else that one may want, whether they want to become a CTO or a cybersecurity guy or a great musician or whatever it is going to be very, very difficult because you're not willing to be accountable. And most importantly, accountable to yourself.
So my business partner at that financial software company.
Yeah.
His name is Robert Hartwood. Great guy. Fighter pilot in the Desert Storm war type thing. And airline pilot to this day. And he just brilliant guy, great family, everything. Has helped me out numerous times in life. I asked him one day after watching him. So I was building software to help his sales process essentially automate some of the more expensive analyst work that was being done. So I'd watch the analyst work, I'd watch him work, and then I'd build that to help him scale his business. Through that process, one day I was upstairs of the office and I said, hey, why are you successful? Like, I see you doing this stuff. You've got jets and Teslas and, you know, it's crazy. This is unbelievable. Like what's missing in me? Like, what do I need? And he walked over to a bookshelf and handed me this book by Jocko Willink called Extreme Ownership. And he's Navy SEAL guy, Extreme Ownership. Yeah. And the one I sat down that night and that book I actually read.
Okay. So not audible.
My eyes, not audible, that book, because he handed it to me. So I had that. I went home. I read it. And there's only one takeaway for me that sticks in my mind from that book. And that is the moment you make yourself responsible for something is the moment you empower yourself to change it, to change the outcome in the future. And so people think I'm crazy when I do this, but I'm always asking myself, like, how was that my fault? How was getting hit by the car my fault? How was this failure my fault? Because if I don't allow myself to be responsible for the fault, then I don't know how to change my skills or circumstances or environment for the next time that may be coming at me. And then I'm just like, you know, head in the ground. So that doesn't work very well for me.
Yeah, that's... And there's a lot of gems on this podcast. I hope people are paying attention because that's there's some really good advice and it's applicable generally to success, period. And it shows, I mean, 600 plus people that you have gone through, it seems like a lot of things, you have your own value system, but probably a lot of knowledge is rubbed off as well in the process of doing this.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I encourage everybody to go have a conversation, like a meaningful conversation with at least 100 people, because it'll change your view of the world, because most people don't. They have the illusion they do because they check out at the grocery store or they have these small brief interactions. But if you have a conversation about a specific topic in which you're interested or knowledgeable on with 100 different people, you'll start to see the world differently because of how those 100 people communicate with you.
Absolutely. And I can vouch for that personally. We're not up to 600 episodes, but we're like 100 some odd. And
yeah,
absolutely. It really does open you up because what you, especially when it challenges something that you've held near and dear and you're like, well, you know what? That guy's actually right. You know, Joel, you've been a phenomenal guest here. It's been a pleasure conversation to say the least, but I'd like to give you a couple minutes to talk about whatever it is you want to plug. Let our audience know.
Yeah. So aliens, we're going to plug aliens.
Okay, plug aliens, man. That's fine. If they're listening, maybe they are. I don't know.
Take me to your leader. No. So I know I tend to get more excited about the tech and science ones now simply because of the act that I have had the leadership conversation 500 times. So if you want great, high quality leadership conversation, typically even in the fun episodes, we do a leadership component. So we'll do, you know, Ryan Graves is an Air Force pilot, right? So a Navy pilot. So we're going to do, he understands leadership, right? Squadrons and all that. So we're going to talk about leadership. So in the episodes, some of them are leadership and then technology, product, things like that. think of like Shri from PayPal coming on and talking, or from eBay or from Upwork or any of those places. We'll talk about those things. GoDaddy was specifically really good with experimenting and iterating with technologies through their own platform. But so there's those episodes, and then there's the ones where it's leadership and fun, and then there's leadership and tech. And so what we've done is we've actually split them, because podcasts don't have playlists. So we split them into three different shows. So Okay. Everything airs on Modern CTO. On Joel Beasley Tech Titans. Those are the best leadership episodes, crushed down to 10 minutes of the best advice.
Fantastic.
So just quick, fun, bite. That's what I wanted. I was like, that's what I want. And so we made it. And then there's Joel Beasley Tech and Science, which are just the tech and science, the Ryan Graves Air Force One, the Resurrecting Woolly Mammoths, 3D printing things, all of that stuff. So we noticed that those are our audiences, right? The tech leadership and the people interested in the science. And so we've split the show off like that.
That's the show idea.
Yeah. And then if your company's been thinking about a podcast, your CEO has been like, hey, maybe we should have a podcast, you go to proseriesmedia.com, and that's where you can connect with us, and we can show you how we build podcasts for different companies.
Well, fantastic. Well, I'm sure you're going to get some calls on that one. It seems like podcasting has become ultra popular. It's a pretty competitive market, but you know, it's a unique way to put content out there that's very unique and specific.
It's very much web design, early days web design, where like you can have your nephew do it for $45 or you know what I'm saying? Or you can spend $45 million and have a brilliant person do it. There's a huge spectrum. So we figured out how to do it, not because we wanted to sell the service. We figured out how to do it because of what happened with our show. And then we just take those principles and replicate them. And so it's weird to be an expert in something you didn't intend to be an expert on. Like when I was doing software, I intended to be like a great software developer, and I intended to be an expert there, but I kind of walked backwards into this one.
That's the story of entrepreneurship. I think everyone has a story along those lines. Well, Joel, it's been a pleasure. I don't want to keep you more than the time that you were so generous to give us, but it's been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for being here. Our audience appreciates it, and I certainly appreciate it personally.